Remember last week I was talking about being resilient, and I'm, you know, and I've already looked at what I'm going to do in 2 weeks, because next week is Anthony's birthday, and he's also going to share, so that's going to go on the 14th, and then I'll share on the 21st, and then we've got Dave and Susie Arnold are going to be with us on the 28th, so that's pretty cool. They're the ones that are planning the Revolution Church up in Virginia, and we were able to help them out, and he sent me a text on Friday asking me if it'd be okay if he came and he wanted to just say thank you. I'm like, well, can you share too? Because he's got a great word. And matter of fact, I put his live feed link into our page pretty frequently, so you can actually listen to him. So they'll be with us on the 28th, which will be fun. But anyway, so I was just thinking about, you know, I went on Google and I Googled the word resilient. And it was kind of neat. I found a page that kind of talked about 10 different characteristics of people who are resilient, and I may share those from a Christ follower perspective. But after the message last week, Dan and I briefly shared, and I talked about how, you know, last week I gave the definition for butthurt. Because that's kind of, you know, the culture that we live in. People are, you know, extremely sensitive and extremely easily offended. And, you know, as Christ followers, we're supposed to be, you know, resilient. You know, Christ in us is the hope of glory. The grace of God gives us the strength to do what is impossible for men. And as Dan and I were talking, he says that, you know, one of the I don't know if he read this someplace or if he came up with this on his own, but he said, you know, what he likes to term it as is that we live in a snowflake generation. And he said, it's a snowflake generation he gave me three, and then I added one to that as I was thinking about it. He said, one is that everybody's an individual. You know, snowflakes, every snowflake's supposed to be unique and individual. And that's, you know, that's kind of like everybody wants to be unique. They don't want to think that they have, you know, characteristics or similarities to anybody else. So they're individuals. But then snowflakes are also extremely fragile, aren't they? Like, if you hold your hand out to try to catch one, it hits your hand, and it's only a moment before it melts. And that kind of tags to the second one is they can't take heat, right? And there's a lot of people in our culture today that are extremely individualistic, and they live separated lives. They really aren't connected with a community or a family. Their family may be very dysfunctional and disjointed. That seems to be more and more common, you know, now than it probably ever has been before. People, like I said, they're extremely easily offended, and so that makes them fragile, and they can't take heat. You know, and a lot of that taking the heat comes from, you know, the style of parenting that is popular today, which I've heard it termed helicopter parenting, which basically means mom and dad. And usually, mom and dad, what they do is they hover over their children, and they don't let their children experience life, make decisions on their own, you know, experience even, you know, hard situations. And because of that, there's a lot of people that are extremely fragile, and they can't handle pressure. You know, and pressure is what refines us. It's what strengthens us. And I'm not talking about taking a toddler and putting her out in the middle of the road. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about, you know, as we're raising our children, allowing them to experience and to deal with situations, or maybe, you know, relational things that they got going on at school or whatever. But and then the one that I added was that people are easily blown around. Like, they just shift. Like, this day they're like this, but tomorrow they could be like this because they heard this teaching, or they read this article, or this thing like here, and there's just no stability in their lives, and they're just kind of all over the place. You know, and it's kind of like, it kind of goes along with this thing that I put up here last week, is that, you know, they got church on Sunday, and then the rest of the week they're kind of doing whatever. And so that means they're kind of blown around because these two don't cross, and so that means this experience over here does not play into this experience over here, and this wall is extremely strong and you know, more, you know, resilient, really, and it keeps, you know, the separation so that these two don't mix, and so they're just kind of blown around. And on Sunday they come in and act like a Christian, and then Monday they're back at work acting like whatever. I didn't say that. That was back there. And really what's supposed to happen, now, Dan last week gave me some props on my stick figures. He said they were really kind of, so this week I upped it and made female stick figures. How about that, huh? It's unparalleled. Yeah, so... But anyway, so what's supposed to be going on is if we're going to be resilient people, then we can't have, you know, two lives. Because this right here is instability, really. It's instability. It you know, when this doesn't affect these, then these are unstable. And it makes us like these snowflake, you know, the snowflake generation where everybody's an individual, everybody's different. We're supposed to be like Christ, so guess what? We're all supposed to be alike. Because if we're all going after being like Christ, then there is similarities in how we in what we do and how we live. Did you have something you wanted to say? You have to say it loud.
Okay.
Right. Two-legged stool over here. Anybody ever try to sit on a two-legged stool? Anybody ever seen a two-legged stool? I mean, you can get like a one-legged thing where you just kind of lean up against it, but I don't know that I've ever seen a two-legged stool. But usually what happens when a leg breaks off a stool? We either fix it or we get rid of it, right? Dan would fix it because he's a carpenter, and the rest of us who are not, we would get rid of it. Or we get some duct tape out and try to fix it. That's how I fix things is duct tape now. But anyway, so, you know, if we have these separation, this over here, this is stability. This is where resilience comes from. And as we mature in Christ, like I brought Reese up here and talked about how you know in the Jewish culture when a young ladies were a little bit theirs could happen at 12, actually for young men and young ladies either 12 or 13, and they would have a ceremony, a bar mitzvah or a bat mitzvah, and that was like a passage into adulthood. And when they went through that ceremony, they were no longer treated as a child, and now they had adult responsibilities. And see, we don't do that much in our culture today. What we have created this youth culture. And in the youth culture, many times what happens is they're just older kids that get babysat by youth pastors, and they get fed pizza and watch movies and, you know, steal hubcaps and then sell them back to you over outside to raise money. And I'm not saying that everyone's like that, but generally speaking, that's kind of what's happened. And they are a subculture off by themselves, and they don't mix with older people or younger people because they're in that awkward stage of teenage. That's an awkward place. It really is. And so the you know we've created this thing, and when they step, they didn't have that in the Jewish culture. A 13-year-old was now an adult, and when it came time to do like we do, where you know somebody will come up and pray and to open it up, and then somebody will share after the music to kind of tie it all together, and then somebody shares a psalm, and somebody comes up and does an offering or receives the offering and does announcements, and then all these kind of things that are going on in their culture, a 13-year-old entered into that, and they did all of those things as well. See, we don't expect that of our 13-year-olds. Well, you know, they're children. No, they're young adults. They really are. They're young adults. There's a lot of maturing that needs to happen, but maturity happens by doing mature things. Paul said, when I was a child, I did childish things, but when I became a man, I put childish ways behind me. So, you know, and I know Reese's parents, that's what they're doing with him, is they expect mature activities and characteristics, and that's what they're developing in him. And I think it's an awesome thing listening to Sarah and Antoine talk about how, you know, what they're doing with their kids and many others too. And that's what we're supposed to do, is we're supposed to help them develop these lives that are resilient, even to the point where they have troubles that they have to go back and face that trouble. And yeah, we may be there watching to make sure, like as a safety net in case they fall, that we can either, you know, catch them before they hit the ground or you know, lift them back up. But really, where their strength will come from is by facing those things. Because when they're adults, you know, mom and dad, they can't live, well, some do. There are people that, you know, live in their basement forever, you know, 30s, 40s, 50s. And it's not because they're there for their parents' sake, they're there because they're not strong enough to be able to go out on their own. And that's a problem. You know, and I'm not saying that, you know, that's 100%, but that's more and more in our generation than it's probably ever been before. Because they fail to launch, I think is what the sociologists call it. Is we have a lot of adults that are failing to launch into their own life because they have no resiliency. The maturity hasn't been there. Mom has done everything for them, or dad has done everything for them, and they can't do anything on their own. What's going to happen when you know, my generation comes to our twilight years and we're in need to be taken care of, because that's the natural thing and that's biblical, what happens? Who's going to take care of us? You know, not the ones that we've been taken care of if we've lived like that. They won't have the ability. Then what? Which is why you see the culture around us very shaky, very wishy-washy, very snowflake. You know, here and there, all over, you know, whatever we want to hear right now. You know, we're looking for free stuff, and sometimes, you know, there's a lot of people who vote so they can get free stuff. Somebody's got to pay for that. Who? The people that will work. But if that force gets smaller, then what? At some point, there's going to be a collapse. Has nothing to do with my sermon. Probably got closer to politics than I care publicly, but let's start at Acts 24. I think I shared this last week. And then next week, I'll share the definition of resilient again, just to kind of to hit that, because I'm going to step back into that. But I want to, I started talking about this last week about offense. And Acts 24, verse 16, and this is the Amplified. So like I said, you know, this has got a lot of extra words, it explains things a little bit deeper, or a little bit more fully. And it says that, you know, the writer says, Luke is writing this. And he says, therefore, I exercise and discipline myself. I exercise and discipline myself. At some point in our lives, we have to step into this place where we take responsibility. And that means I mom and dad are no longer there to have to tell me what to do. What happens is that they've been showing me and they've been releasing me into it, and now I know what it is. He says, I always exercise and discipline myself. And what it says is to mortify my body. Because, and he's talking about our kind of like our soul man that doesn't want to do this thing, that doesn't want to do hard things, that wants to let mom take care of us, that wants to let grandma take care of us, wants to let somebody else take care of us. That's kind of the natural man. The natural man, you know, kind of just wants to suck his thumb in the corner someplace and let somebody take care of all of our needs. But if we're going to step into that place of maturity, then we have to discipline ourselves. We have to exercise. We have to do things. You know, our children have to do things to learn how to be mature. And you know, I'm 53, and I'm still doing things to exercise, to learn, to continue to grow, because I've learned that it doesn't stop. If I'm a disciple of Christ, which is what we're called to, and which we're called to create in other, you know, and to replicate in other people's lives, then a disciple is a follower, but they're also a forever learner. I'm taking Bible classes online. I'm in what's called a huddle with there's six of us in there, and we're learning new things and we're being challenged in those things. We have homework. We come back in and we discuss these things. We get questioned about those. You know, and that's a hard thing, man, is to have somebody question you on what it is you're doing and why it is you're doing it. We don't like questions. I think Dan and I were talking about that, you know, when we see somebody who will engage in conversation to the point where they can be questioned, and they welcome those, because when you're questioned, you know, sometimes we think it's a value thing or an identity thing, and we get all defensive or offended, because we're easily offended, and so we're offended by getting questioned. Well, you know what that shows? It shows weakness. It's a weakness of resolve. It's a lack of resilience. You know, we should be people of conviction. And if I'm convicted, your questions are not going to really move me. Matter of fact, your questions may drive me deeper, or they may challenge me to think and maybe even change my mind on the matter. There are a lot of things that I'm doing now that I didn't do 10 years ago. You know why? Because I've grown, I've matured, I've been challenged, And not everything. God's still got, there's still some work. There's still layers that have to be peeled off of me. There's probably levels of gross immaturity that I need to deal with. And God will, and you know, I believe will bring me that place where I will have to face those. But that's a part of the process of life. So he says, I always exercise and discipline myself, mortifying my body, deadening my carnal affections. You know, for me personally, there's a certain way that I have to eat because my life depends on it. You know that there's a certain way that I would like to eat? And what I understand is that food is fuel. And I've had to draw a line and say, I will not draw comfort from what I eat because the Holy Spirit is the comforter. And so what I do is I have to, and like I said, for me, it's a life or death thing. But I believe that food is a life or death thing for all of us, and we should look at it as such, and we should eat to live, not live to eat. But I have to push back those carnal because they make things that are, you know, junk food looks really good, doesn't it? I mean, that's how they sell the crap to us. The pictures always look even better than the real thing too, but it never bothers us that it doesn't look the same as the picture did. And then when you taste it, they make that stuff taste really good too, don't they? Nobody wants to agree with that because y'all don't eat anything bad, right? Either that or you do and you don't want to answer. But, you know, so if you have to do that or if you choose to do that, you know, maybe it's a season of fasting or maybe God wants to take something away from you because it's an addiction. I can't give up that. Well, guess what? You're addicted then. That's what you're saying. If you can't do it, then it rules you. It's okay. If you guys aren't snowflakes, so I'm not going to treat you like snowflakes. Hopefully anybody listening to our live podcast hasn't turned it, or our live feed hasn't turned it off because I offended them. Because when that kind of mature talk can be offensive to our carnal nature sometimes, can't it? Like, you can feel it, like, why is he punching me? Why is he throwing rocks at me? Why is he hitting me like this? He's being mean. No, I love you. I love you, and I want to be with you for a long time. And how do we do that? We do it by taking care of ourselves. I'm not saying we can't have any of that. It's just the way that I have to do it. I have to be cut and dry, none of that. But it is a battle. Going on, it says bodily appetites. My body sometimes will say, hey, you want that? And I'll say, no, you don't. You're not in charge. You know, and maybe that moment where my blood sugar drops lower because I'm not eating the carbohydrates that keeps my blood sugar higher because I'm trying to, you know, maintain it by diet and just a little bit of supplementation. And so sometimes I do too well and I can drop down, or just because my body just is going through some weird thing, I can drop, and my body is craving what? Sugar. It really is. Matter of fact, medically, that's what I should have. Because if you give me insulin at that moment when I'm down here, you kill me. That's why I wear a bracelet, because I don't want to die because somebody well-meaning hits me with insulin because I'm a diabetic. It doesn't own me. I manage it. It's just along for the ride. And at some point, you know, it's a non-issue. But my body will have an appetite for sugar. And I have to tell it, no, this is what I will give you. I will give you some extra protein, some extra fat, good fats, but you're not going to have carbohydrates and sugar. I'm not going to allow you to do it because I know I can get the sugar back up by eating protein because my body will convert it. Because I've learned that, so that I can exercise dominion even over the carnality that I live in, my bodily appetite, worldly desires. Oh my goodness. The world is constantly flashing the things that it wants us to buy into so that we'll stay. And it's okay, you can stay in church, but just have that separation. How many people are owned by work where they can't enjoy their family, they can't rest properly? Because your body has to rejuvenate. It has to. It's by design. The first day of man's life was he entered into the rest of the Lord. God had done all the work. His first day alive, he's in the rest. What's that say? Rest is important. It's a promise, if you read the latter part, I think, Hebrews 3 and Hebrews 4. It's a promise, but not everybody's going to do it. It's available, but not everybody will do it. But you know, if we have separations, we do the same thing over here, and there are some people that are owned by this, but you know what? There are some people that are owned by this. And sometimes they're owned by this, and it's not even theirs, it's their children's. Soccer moms. They're driving their kids to 3 and 4, each child to 3 and 4 and 5 different things that they do after school or whatever. And mom's the one getting wore out. Kids got an abundance of energy, so they're just running it out. And mom's getting wore out because she's got, you know, maybe 2 or 3 children that are going 5 places. So they're going 10. She's taking these kids 10 to 15 different places during the week. And she's wore out by their play. And it owns the family. Does that mean sports and those kinds of things are bad? No. But if they're ruling, then that's not good. And like I said, generally it's not good on mom or dad or both. Actually, a lot of good can come from us from sports. Learn how to lose. But see, we're taking that out of our culture too, which is creating snowflakes. Everybody gets a participation award. Nobody wins. Nobody loses. Nana, the sweetest person in the room, she's ruthless when it comes to keeping score. Yes. Somebody's winning. Matter of fact, next year I think she wants to be a scorekeeper. Like it's become her life calling. How we lose is important. And the only way to learn how to lose is by losing occasionally. It's not a bad thing. What it does is it builds resilience. It builds strength. It builds strength of character that I can lose as well as I can win. I'm probably as competitive as they come. But I've gotten to the point where I will laugh at myself when I'm losing. Or I've lost. Because I want to keep it to where it's in its right place. It's in its right perspective. It can't own me either. But then, you know, this one over here, rest. What happens when you overdo rest? Lazy. Somebody else pays the bill. Somebody else does the work. Somebody else will pick up a piece of paper. Somebody else will take out the trash. Somebody else will do the dishes. Somebody else will do the laundry. Thank goodness for moms, because they're generally the one that's somebody else. Generally. Not in this house, because you guys, no snowflakes here, so we're teaching, you know, the young, you know, we're doing those things, right? Because we're perfect. We're working on it. Worldly desires, endeavoring in all things. Look what it says, to have a clear, unshaken, blameless conscience. Look what it says next. Void of offense towards God and towards men. How can we get offended at God when things don't work out the way that we think they should? We've all had that happen. All of us in here probably have 1 or 2 questions, if we were to be real and to be honest. We have 1 or 2 questions that when we are face to face with the Lord, we're going to ask him, why? Why did this happen? Why did it go like this? Why did you allow that? I don't think that that's a bad thing to have those kind of conversations with God and even have a couple of questions tucked in our pocket. I don't think that's necessarily bad. As long as it doesn't become an offense. How do I know it's an offense? If it's poked and it pain comes from it, something seethes from it. You know what I'm saying? Like an infection. Ever see something that's grossly infected and it's like red and puffy and maybe even pussy or green? Ever see something got so infected it turned green? And what happens when that's lanced? Ugh. Sometimes that's like in our soul, can't it be? That our hearts can be like that, and something touches it, and it's like this green thing just vomits out of us. When we're offended, what we generally do is we generally verbalize it in conversation. either the next time that person or that event comes up, or the next person that we talk to. And generally what we do is we, you know, and this is just me, it's human nature, so we tend to justify our rightness in the situation on why we're offended and why we have the right to stay offended. But it's not our right. It's not our right. You know, we're expected and required of the Lord to exercise forgiveness. I'm going to read this. I saw this quote. It's amazing when you're thinking and meditating about a certain, whether it's a topic or whatever, you'll see a lot of things. You know, and they're always there. It's just that your mind is focused on a certain thing, so you'll see it. But there's this lady. I don't even know how I saw this. It was just, you know, I think it came up on my Twitter feed someplace, and I was like, man, this is awesome. And it's her name is Veronica Anderson. She's a doctor. And I didn't look into her, so I can't validate her. I don't know her or know of her. I just know that this quote was amazing. It says, forgiveness is about your healing, not the people who hurt you. I'm going to say that again. Forgiveness is about your healing, not about the person, the people that hurt you. Because they may never, ever ask for forgiveness. And if they never ask for forgiveness and own the offense, then what we tend to do is like, well, they haven't asked for forgiveness, so I don't have to forgive them. Not true. There's nothing scriptural about that at all. And we don't want to have this separated life. We want to have Christ at the center of our life so that we have resiliency and can be able to stand, and we're not snowflakes, and we can actually provide for the weak, and we can be there for them and cover them and be intercessors for their weakness in their lives and bring them into a place of strength themselves, because they see it in us and we transfer and we reproduce that in their lives like Christ has done in our lives. Because that's the way kingdom is supposed to be lived. That even though I'm weak, I'm strong. How can that be? Because of the grace of God on the inside of us. The breath of God, the Spirit of God gives us the ability to do something that we can't do on our own and to be something we can't be by ourselves. Because to forgive without the asking of forgiveness is a really impossible thing for most people. Right? But what if that person is dead? Then what? Because I know we all have known somebody who has gone on, passed out of this life. We've known somebody who was offended at that person. Well, that person doesn't have the ability to come back and ask for forgiveness. So guess what? That eats at us like a cancer. Because that's what unforgiveness does. It turns us bitter. And every time we're touched, bitterness comes out of us. Resentment comes out of us. Guilt comes out of us. Shame comes out of us. All those things associated with unforgiveness. And we're required of the Lord, and He doesn't require anything of us that He won't help us do. You know, that saying that says that God, you know, won't give you anything that you can't handle is a lie. He's not going to give you anything that you can't handle with Him. That's the caveat. That's the addition to that, is that you can do it with Him. With man, these things are impossible, but with God, all things are possible. So that we can exercise forgiveness to people who haven't asked for it. Why? Because it's for my good. Because I have to guard my heart, because out of my heart flow the issues of life, not only my life, but the lives of others around me. I think I talked about this last week, how I live my life in Christ is between me and Him. It's a personal thing. But how it's lived out is a public thing, and it affects everybody around me. And not just because I get to stand up here with a microphone and share my heart and try to share, you know, the kingdom and God's love and all those kind of things. Whether I sit, you know, where you're sitting or whatever, I'm still required because of Christ in me to be empowered and to walk in grace. It's not about function, it's about identity. I'm a Christ follower, I'm a disciple of Christ. Turn over to Luke chapter 17. Luke chapter 17, just as verses 1 through 6. So So Jesus sat down with his disciples. He had a group of people that followed him everywhere he went. They lived life together. So one day he said to his disciples, there will always be temptations to sin. That word there, temptations to sin, or sin, that phrase, what it means is offense. Or scandal. Remember I told you that the Greek word is where we get the word scandal? He said, there will always be temptations for offense. And remember I shared with you how the word picture that goes along with offense is a snare or a trap? Because that's what happens when we get offended, is we get trapped in that place. And because we get trapped in that place, we can't grow or mature beyond that place. And we keep bumping up against this wall, and we can't move on. And we become stunted in our growth. We don't mature. There's a gross immaturity a lot of times that goes along with offense. And somebody can look at it and say, I don't get that. But you know, we're in that place and we're like, how could you not get that? Let me share with you how you can understand my offense. And you can come into my offense with me and take up my offense with me and for me. And the danger in that is when we bring other people into our fence, sometimes the grace for them to move out of that place is even more difficult because it didn't even have anything to do with them. Well, I don't like this person. Why don't you like them? Well, because of what they did to that person, and now I'm offended because they did this to them, and I'm over here siding with them. Because remember, forgiveness and trust are two different things. We are to exercise forgiveness, but it doesn't mean that we have to grant trust. Trust is to be earned by being worthy of trust. And so we can forgive them, but that doesn't mean that we have to let them right back into that place where they were at before. Because what will happen is if they haven't changed, they'll probably do it again, and then we're going to have that struggle and that battle all over again. We're not required to allow them in like that. We're just required to forgive and to guard our heart. What they're doing is between them and the Lord. I'm not worried about that. I got enough to, you know, deal with just me. So he said that there will always be temptations to sin or to be offended or offenses. And he says, what sorrow awaits the person who does the tempting? You know, I don't know if it's going to be like a big screen TV where they'll see all the places where they were used. And they allowed themselves to be in that place where they tempted somebody to sin or to be offended, and they just were offensive, and they just got to deal with me. You ever meet anybody like that? They won't change, and people need to deal with them. Now, there's a measure of truth to that. We do need to deal with people, but that doesn't mean it gives us license to remain a jackass. That's in the Bible. That's not a bad word. One prophesied, but anyway, and it's worse if you go to Old King James, man. It drops Jack out of the equation. Which opens up like a whole nother thing, especially the culture that we live in. Things that have happened to people that was outside of their control, things that they experienced, and now they're carrying that with them, and they're not dealing with it properly so that they can get on beyond it. Doesn't mean they can forget it, because it's always going to be in the memory, but it shouldn't own them, and it can be worked through. You just may need some help, and it's okay to get help. You may have to revisit it and let it go, but you know what I'm saying? And that's a part of our culture. You know, I probably ought to leave that alone. What sorrow awaits the person who does the tempting? It would be better to be thrown into the sea with a millstone hung around your neck than to cause one of these little ones to fall into sin. So what's that say? I should guard myself against being offensive. I don't have a card that says I get to be a certain way. So watch yourselves. Ah! Bonnie, can't you just tell me when I'm... No, he said, watch yourselves. Andy, can't you like look out after me? And when, no, watch yourself. Not that you don't have people around you for accountability and those kind of things, because that's healthy and that helps in the stability and all that kind of stuff. But really, at the end of the day, I'm responsible for me. Watch myself. Guard my heart. You know, what it say? Luke said, therefore, I always exercise and discipline myself. Not easily offended. Say that. But if I hear myself saying it, it becomes more believable than if you tell me. And it's a confession. And then I want to live into my confession because I don't want to be a hypocrite. Hypocrisy wasn't a good thing. Jesus had a lot to say about hypocrites. So my challenge is to say something like that. I'm not easily offended. And then to try to not be easily offended. And how do I do that? Because with man, these things are impossible. But with God, all things are possible. So I can be not easily offended. And when I'm offended, there's even provision for that. And I may get there someday. It's an amazing thing because the guys and gals that are in the back and behind the window back there, because there is somebody else running this whole thing from back there, just like the Wizard of Oz. I may look like Oz, but there's somebody else running it. But anyway, so you know they ask me for the scriptures so they can put them up, and generally when I step into a new subject matter, the notes that I have on my iPad, I never finish them. I give them, like today, Mike came up and he's like, hey, you know, because they're very diligent about that to make sure that, you know, and I'm like, dude, same last week. It is what it is. So, watch yourselves. If another believer sins, rebuke that person. What's it mean to rebuke? It means to talk to them. Show them what it is. Ooh, gosh, we don't like doing that. If Brian does something to me, says something, he just says something mean about an old broke guy or something, or you know, or whatever. You know, instead of me saying, hey, you know, man, that's kind of harsh words. You know, and it wasn't like you're correcting behavior. You're just being mean to me. Because I'm worried about his snowflakeness. Because now I've offended him. He's going to have to. But what I'll do is instead of talking to him, I'll come over here and tell, Bonnie, you know what he said to me? He said I was an old broke guy. And I'll convince her. I get it. And I'll convince her, and then I may talk to Randy, and I'll expect maybe one of them to say something to him or side with me against him. You know, now my you know, I'll get a whole bunch of old broke people, and we'll show you. And they'll be offended at him now. Nobody will hang out with Brian because he's always calling people old broke people. Eventually, I'll get to the right person that may come and talk to him. But it'll be so convoluted by the time it gets all the way back to him, he'll have absolutely no clue where this came from. And he'll look and say, what you just told me is unjustified because I never said that to you. I don't even know what you're talking about. It says here, then if there is repentance, forgive. Even if that person wrongs you seven times a day and each time turns again and asks for forgiveness, you must forgive. So here's one that talks about them asking for, like, dude, don't say that, please, because really it hurts. It's right here, dude. Come on, man. Yeah. And I turn and we talk in the next, you know, 5 minutes later and he says it again. And what's the obligation? It's like, dude, you just said it again. And he's, oh, I'm sorry. 7 times 70 is how much? 490 times. And Jesus, what he's saying here, it's a hyperbole. So he's kind of making this big thing that 7 times 70, he wasn't talking about 490 times that you should be tick marking this off. He's saying, basically, no matter how many times this person does it in the day, you are to forgive them. Same offense, same day. Tomorrow, guess what? 7 times 70 starts all over again. With man, these things are impossible, but with all God, with God, all things are possible. So we're supposed to be very stable, resilient, strong people. We're not supposed to be snowflakes, easily blown around and all separated and isolated and individualistic. You know, because where has our generation isolated themselves into? There are so many things that I could be doing on my phone right now, standing in front of you and totally ignore what you, I not even know the faces that you're making at me. I could just be like staring at my granddaughter. And the text that Randy told me about being high. Because it wasn't H-I, it was H-I-G-H, so I don't know what that's all about. We can talk later. He is from college, that's right. Did you know that Colorado used to be Mexico? But this is where it's isolation, not only individualism, but it's isolation. Because, I mean, and not that this is bad. You know, I can talk to a lot of people and communicate with them and stay in touch with them, all those kind of things. But, you know, sometimes there are people that are here with me that I need to engage and be, you know, connected with. I don't need to, you know, so it's kind of a yes and, not an either or. Now, if you choose either or, that's okay. Just choose rightly. You know, if you're choosing, you know, people or technology, please choose people. That's what Jesus would have chosen. How do I know? Because he came and died for us for relationship purposes and all that kind of stuff. So I, you know, choose people. But I do think it's possible to keep this thing, you know, exercise discipline. And sometimes it's best to put it down. Where other times I need to catch up. All those kind of things. We can do that. 7 times 70 you must forgive. And the apostle said to the Lord, show us how to increase our faith. Huh. Because forgiveness is about faith. You know, another word that's synonymous with faith is risk. For me to exercise forgiveness towards Brian for the offense of the old broke guy is to step into risk. Because he may do it again. Or he may offend me with something else. Because when I forgive, what I'm doing is I'm repairing a relationship. And I'm taking responsibility to do that. But I'm also taking the risk that he may do it again. And again, and again. Show us how to increase our faith. You know what they felt? They felt conviction. Because every one of them probably had a picture of an event or a person come up in their mind when he was talking about that, of somebody who was offensive towards them and that they hadn't released. So they didn't have healing in their heart. Their heart was broken. Because their heart was broken, every other relationship was affected by that. Look what he says. He says, if you had the faith even as small as a mustard seed. Saying it doesn't take a lot. How is it that we can have faith to be saved? Something that we really can't tangibly touch, but to exercise forgiveness towards a brother or sister or a family member or somebody, anybody, we can't. Man, it's so tough for us, isn't it? But he's saying it's not, you know, he says that you can say to the mulberry tree, may you be uprooted and thrown into the sea, and it would obey you. The mulberry tree had roots that went deep and went wide and was extremely strong and stable. That's why he used that as an example. He would speak in a language that they understood. So we think about those things and it doesn't really make a big bunch of sense to us. But they understood that this was amazing how much he was asking of them. But how much, you know, that you have, if you exercise your faith, the power that you have at your disposal because of your faith and your trust towards the Lord and what it is he's saying and stepping into that place, that what's going to well up on the inside of you is going to be amazing. And it's not just for a special person, but it's for whosoever will. from the little ones. And actually for them, they exercise a lot of faith. But somehow we grow out of that because we've been hurt, we've been let down, we've been rejected, we've lived life. It's kind of like imagination. Little ones have great imagination. Somehow we help them grow out of it, and we have less imagination older than what the little ones do. Jesus said, you're to come to the Father like little children. He relates forgiveness and long-suffering. 7 times 70, that's long-suffering. He relates that to faith. Richie Clark posted something yesterday, and I'll read this and then I'll close. Oh, I'm sorry. No, I won't read this. I'll save this. So what's it take to forgive? It takes faith. It takes the ability to step off into the unknown. Not really sure what's going to happen. Probably they're going to do it again. But you know what, Lord? This is what you've called me to. This is what you've spoken to me. This is where you've directed me. I had that. And it was huge. I took our whole church on this journey into a place of risk because I felt like that's what God told us to do. That's what he told me to do. That's where he told me to go. And then I just offered to whoever wanted to go on the journey with me. And you know what? It didn't work. And there were lots of places for me to be offended. And there were lots of places where I blew it and sinned and took the offense and carried it for a while. I can tell you today that I don't carry the offense. But it took some time. It took some effort and some conscious decision. It took discipline. It took me exercising faith to release. It just happens, man. Sometimes we can see that, we know that it's going to happen. But he's saying, do it again. Do it again. And what happens, you know, is it not that we're supposed to be scarred and no longer feel? What should happen is that we should be strong and matured. That when it does come again, because it's going to, life happens, it's going to happen again, that next time it's like, I got a shield now. You're not going to hurt me. And it's not a shield to keep out. I still open up. Here's my heart. But I watch for offense. I watch for that infection, the unforgiveness, the bitterness. I guard against that kind of stuff. But it's a standing guard, not a building a wall. It's a watching after, not a shielding from. So anyway, Mel, are you done? These will be posted up on our podcast page this week, so you can listen to them. Even as I'm speaking, I'm listening to myself, and sometimes I'm saying something that the Lord's directing me to say. That kind of I go like that, like, man, I'm gonna have to live that out now. Otherwise, I'm a hypocrite, making a declaration. So, what you got? Let me get the microphone.